Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile. And you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome to How to Fix It. I'm John Avalon. And the purpose of this podcast is to talk about finding solutions to the problems we face, not just endlessly fixating on the problems themselves. But one of the biggest challenges we have right now took the form of a Republican budget bill, now law, which promises to increase income inequality, massive transfers of wealth from the poor and the middle class to the super rich, while dramatically increasing the deficit and the debt. But to help us make sense of it all and to help illuminate a better way forward, is David Kamen. He's an NYU professor and alumni of both the Obama and Biden administrations, and he has written and thought deeply about better, more fair ways to address our tax situation, to put us on a path of growth as well as fairness and opportunity. David, it's great to have you on How to Fix It.
It's great to be here, and I look forward to the conversation.
Well, myself as well. I want to start something sort of ripped from the headlines. Trump's long threatened threats to fire Fed Chair Jerome Powell seem to have hit another level with a letter being drafted that the New York Times got its hands on saying that Trump would fire Powell. Just in terms of the fiscal stability of the United States, want to get your take on that.
I mean, broadly, and I think this is more than about fiscal stability, though it will be about that as well, given the possible effects on interest rates that we pay on our debt, which could actually go the wrong direction rather than the direction Trump is hoping. But I think more broadly speaking, when it comes to our economic stability, this is just a tremendously bad idea. Evidence from around the world suggests that you do have better economic performance when you have an independent central bank. That's not to say that they always make the right call, and they should be subject to appropriate oversight. But the incentives you get when they are directly reporting to political leaders like Trump or other presidents is that they lose credibility and they will end up expanding at a time in which it actually may make sense to be taking some money out of the economy in order to try to get someone reelected. And given the lack of credibility, it will make it harder, not easier, for the Fed and other policymakers to actually allow us to hit targets that people want when it comes to price changes. Not everything, but a lot when it comes to price stability is about expectations and the credibility of policymakers. And a move like firing the Fed chair for made up reasons is what they seem to be on track to do if they end up doing it, would be tremendously counterproductive to all of that. So I hope that they don't actually end up going through with it. But if they did, this would be another step towards undermining the strength of the U.S. economy.
It's just worth repeating that so much of the full faith and credit of the United States, of any nation, is based on trust. And that trust is solidified by an independent central bank that seems immune from partisan politics. And what Trump continues to threaten overall is to remove sort of nonpartisan experts to replace them with partisan lackeys. But that will actually be counterproductive in terms of getting what he wants. Also, lest we need to remind folks, Jerome Powell was first appointed by, wait for it, Donald Trump in his first term. So this is Joe Biden kept him in place for reasons of stability to try to get us out of this hyperpartisan cycle. Same as Chris Wray at the FBI. But Trump's standard seems to be fealty. And that is contrary to what markets, international markets need, especially we'll keep an eye on the bond markets. But, America's credibility is being undermined and that will have real costs for Main Street Americans.
Exactly. And I mean, just in terms of the title of your podcast, it is breaking something that has been fundamentally good for our economy. I think, the Fed appropriately needs to look at itself and figure out ways that it can do better over time. The Fed has, of course, like all institutions, made mistakes at times. But the idea of an independent Fed that is trying to look objectively at where we are, at where the economy is, leads to lower interest rates, not higher interest rates over time, leads to lower inflation, not higher inflation over time. And when it gets really scary and dangerous is when markets lose faith in the credibility of the political leadership and the central bank to maintain price stability. In coming out of the pandemic, one asset we had, and no doubt like inflation went too high as a reason for a variety of reasons, but one tremendous asset we had was the credibility of the Federal Reserve and the markets believing the Fed would get inflation back down. It's part of the reason inflation came back down. Firing the Fed chair would undermine that looking ahead. And it's tremendously counterproductive even for Trump's own agenda, even if they may not see it.
Sometimes people have a way of creating the thing they're afraid of. Let's talk about the tax implications of the big Republican budget bill that passed along partisan lines, because it is, one of my favorite quotes about taxes, and this is your field of expertise, not mine, but is, I'm a history nerd. So Richard Nixon, of all people, said, "We'll never make taxing, we'll never make taxation popular, but we can make it fair." And it goes to issues of fairness. And there is a sense that, the system in place has not been fair. We have seen the erosion, the squeezing of the middle class over a period of decades. The super rich getting richer, and a sense of unfairness and frustration around that. Not that, America is a country where the goal of getting rich, is motivational and is part of an economic opportunity society, which we should be and which we always have been. But some of the analysis I've done, and I want you to give us your analysis, that Bill shows that literally, the money will be taken, in total from the bottom quartile of America's population, and gains given disproportionately to not just the upper quartile, but sort of the upper, I hate using the phrase 1%, but those who disproportionately get the benefits. What is your read on sort of the fairness of this tax bill that has been pushed through and now is law, in terms of healing, exacerbating or healing America's economic divides, which is an issue of stability in our democracy?
Yeah. So unfortunately, this bill goes the wrong direction along several key fronts in terms of what we want from our tax system. It will not give us enough revenue to pay for the government we have now and the government we should have. It will make divides between the top and the rest even wider than they were before, and rewards those who do not need it. It will also complicate the tax system, reward specific professions, specific kinds of activities when there's no good reason to do it, while effectively penalizing others. It will undermine abiding by the law, in terms of like where Republicans are going, the undermining of the IRS, which is sort of a part of this. And so overall, when you put that all together, it is a bill that will help destabilize our fiscal situation while making the tax system worse along a number of dimensions. Just to give a few, you know, to dive into that some.
Yeah.
Let's take the top 0.1%, those making over about 4.8 million a year, you know, as of next year, they'll see a tax cut of approaching $300,000 in 2026 all in as a result of this bill. Let's take a typical family. If you just look at the tax provisions alone, they would get only about $1,800. And as a share of their income, that is, you know, even when you put it in those terms, it's lower. For the bottom, say the bottom 40% of the population, they get less than 10% of the total tax cuts. Now, it gets worse than that, and that's bad. That's because of other elements of this bill and also what's going on outside the bill itself. As I think you've covered in parts of your program, the cuts to Medicaid and food assistance mean that those who are most vulnerable don't just get, you know, a very small amount. They actually lose on net from this bill. There is a transfer from them. And then when you take into account the tariffs, the about $2.5 trillion in tariffs over 10 years that Trump has through executive action now put in place, that then takes families who are already losing and makes them lose even more, takes away much of the tax cut for the middle and still maintains a tax cut for the top. There's also provisions throughout this bill, which we can discuss, that make the tax cut code more complicated in a variety of unfair ways. So you put that all together, it is still a significant increase, trillions of dollars of increase in our federal deficit. And, you know, what for delivering tax cuts that disproportionately benefit the top of the population.
So let's talk about some of those specifics. You mentioned provisions, and I'm a big simplification guy, right? I mean, and this does the opposite, as you point out. What are some of the specific professions that are benefited? Because that's a headline that maybe didn't jump out at folks.
Yeah. So who's a winner? If you are an independent contractor, but not if you're an employee. Why? Because in 2017, and what was probably the worst part of that bill, which was still actually better than the bill they just passed by a significant margin. But the worst part of that bill, which they continued, was a provision that effectively cuts your tax rate by 20% if you're an independent contractor or business owner. But it doesn't ever do that if you're an employee. So employees are losers, independent contractors are winners for no good reason. It goes on from there in this bill. Banks that make certain types of loans will now get the interest they earn excluded if that is backed by certain kinds of property in rural areas. But it's the banks that get the exclusion. And again, for no particularly good reason. They expanded a provision which was already plenty generous and which we should be cutting back when it comes to the exclusion of capital gains on venture capitalists' investments in tech startups. They don't need to have their capital gains taxed at a zero rate. There is plenty of incentive and good incentive to invest in those companies. That was a provision that was expanded. They win. Looking at other parts of the bill, you win if you get tips, but not if you're a non-tipped employee. You win if you make overtime, but not if you're an employee who doesn't make overtime. You win if you deduct interest on a new auto purchase, but not if you're not buying a new car. We can talk about how much each part of the population should pay in taxes, though we need in overall for people to pay more to finance our government. But these kinds of provisions unfairly complicate our system, create winners and losers in ways that simply doesn't make sense. And I will say there were many bad parts of the original 2017 law, but on this front, it was actually better. They did one bad provision, the provision which rewarded independent contractors, but they did, in other parts of the code, try to treat people a little more equally. This bill goes in actually the opposite direction along that dimension.
Yeah, more loopholes that all are weighted one way. And then, of course, I think we're all should be hip to the fact that Republicans only give a damn about deficits and debt when Democrats are president. But I mean, this goes in decidedly the wrong direction that digs us in a deeper hole down the line. Is that right?
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Yes. So this is a bill which, you know, taken unto itself, adds over $4 trillion to the debt over the next decade. So this is not about addressing the fiscal challenge we face. And over time, we do probably have a fiscal challenge right now. We are, you know, before this bill, we already had deficits, which were going to be in the range of, you know, 6% of the economy over the next decade, and even assuming the economy keeps growing. This takes that and ramps that up even further to around 7% of the economy before you take into account their tariffs, which would to some degree go in the other direction. But you take this bill and it's $4 trillion of additional debt, So it's doing that even as it's hurting people by cutting Medicaid, cutting food assistance, and so on. So it doesn't do that in order to lower the deficit. It does that to help finance a set of tax changes, which disproportionately benefit the top, which are complicated, unfair, and take us to, in the wrong direction and will make our long-term fiscal situation even more challenging.
Right. And then Democrats will be in the position of cleaning up the mess. Let's talk about solutions. Let's talk about it, not to this bill, you know, because this bill is now law, but an alternate path, because there is a different way. There is a better way. One of the things you talk about is tax reforms that could raise significant revenue. One of the things, you know, like the corporate tax rate, which previous to the last bill was higher than many of our international competitors. Right. I think a strong case can be made. You need a lower basis, but you could have paid for that or raised revenue by closing certain loopholes or making sure that there was a global minimum tax on corporations, which I know is something you've worked on. Talk about those kinds of tax reforms that would raise revenue without raising people's taxes, particularly in the middle class, which to me is the opposite direction we should go in.
We have a variety of ways of making our tax system better from here. Though I do think this bill and the last several decades of tax politics have left us with a very, very real challenge. And so just for a moment before I step into the solutions, I also want to just reflect on, it's been two decades now of tax cutting, right? Started under George W. Bush, continued under President Trump. Altogether, you put it together and you're looking at tax cuts, which are cutting our revenue by, you know, well over 3% of the economy. If we hadn't done all of those rounds of tax cuts, we would not right now be talking about a significant fiscal challenge. We wouldn't have one. Now, I think, you know, that happened. Looking ahead from based on the system we now have, I do think one priority will be coming up with a corporate tax system that maintains incentives to invest and raises considerably more revenue. And I think that we can actually, you know, meet that mark of not significantly undermining incentives and also not creating paper transactions which push profits overseas and get considerably more revenue for our system. Over time, what we've seen is even as corporate profits have increased as a share of the economy, corporate tax revenues have decreased. That's for due to a variety of things, including offshoring of profits, people being able to coming up with even better ways of, you know, planning and avoiding the tax system, and other developments as well. I think that we have an opportunity now, as you said. One way we thought to try to address some of this was to negotiate internationally, have the world set a global minimum rate so that corporations would no longer be able to entirely avoid tax on significant shares of their profits by simply reporting them in low tax jurisdictions, even though they're not actually earned there. And that gives the United States greater ability to raise its rate, and do so without some of the same kinds of behaviors that we saw in our old international tax system, where corporations would then sometimes just report larger and larger profits overseas. There are also reforms we can do to our international tax code to further prevent that. And in light of the global minimum tax that was negotiated. So I think that there's real opportunity to, you know, raise revenue that can raise $2 trillion over a decade. And that can help. Now, that alone, I think there's like real and important reforms that we can do. And just to be clear, the 2017 law and the bill that was just passed did not go the right direction overall when it came to revenue. There were a few ideas there that are actually worth building on, like they too created a minimum tax on foreign profits. They didn't make it strong enough.
What was in the bill that you thought actually was not sufficient, but a step in the right direction?
The old international tax system prior to 2017 was already fundamentally broken. Now, that in part came about because of policymakers' own choices. You know, they created it. And what they had done was they allowed corporations to not pay tax in the United States if they didn't repatriate the funds to the United States, which allowed big corporations just to build up large amounts of profits they would hold overseas. They made it even worse by giving them some tax holidays where they said, oh, now bring it back. We'll give you a really low rate if you bring it back in this year. And then the corporations sort of saw that and decided, we'll never bring the profits back unless you give us a holiday. And that's why we got, you know, $2 trillion built up overseas. And it was a system that made absolutely no sense. So, you know, to give some credit to the 2017 law, and Democrats were making some of the same plans. They got rid of that old system. They taxed some of the old profits. They should have done it at a higher rate. They created a minimum tax, which said that if you reported profits at a really low rate overseas, we'd still tax it. They didn't do it at a high enough rate. They didn't do it at a high enough rate to actually fully incentivize people to bring profits back here and to tax them, you know, in a way that avoided some of the loopholes. But some of those basic structures actually made some sense. And that was in part, we then in the global deal negotiated a global minimum tax going along a sort of similar dimension, even if it's different and more robust.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
So all of that are ways that we can tax corporations more and do so in ways that, you know, goes at some of the paper transactions that corporations will engage in to simply report profits overseas when that's not where the profits are actually earned. But I think, you know, look, that will be part and should and hopefully will be part of the solution. I think that we're also going to need to make real changes to our individual income tax code.
Go on.
We can do a lot of good by taxing the top more equitably, pulling back some of the tax giveaways that were given to them in these bills, such as the special deduction for business owners. There are reforms that we need to do in order how the very, very rich are taxed on their capital gains. And that can also take us a significant way towards a fairer tax system. But I also think on top of that, in order to actually finance the government we have and the government we should have, reforms are probably going to, you know, should go beyond that and go beyond the very top. And one way that the Republicans right now have boxed in good policymaking is they put on the table a set of tax cuts, some of which benefit the very, very top, but some of which also benefit those toward the top, but not at the very, very top. Democrats don't run on them because, you know, Democrats, I think rightly, are focused on making critical investments to grow the economy, you know, expanding healthcare and so on. But Republicans enact them. And then a pattern has been, and this happened back in 2013, we continue 80% of their tax cuts. And that's a dynamic that creates real, real challenges, because in the end, solving our long-term fiscal challenge will mean getting more from corporations, getting more from the very, very top. But given the ways they have undercut the tax base, it will require either getting more from people beyond the very, very top, or alternatively, more of the kinds of cuts that the Republicans have now begun putting on the table, and they're bad. So I think, you know, long term, we're going to have to come to terms with that. The final thing I would say is, you know, the Republicans have begun to put on the table their vision of what it looks like paying for the government. And it means lower and middle class families losing, right? They are now putting on the table Medicaid cuts and SNAP cuts and tariffs, $2.5 trillion of tariffs. So that's a middle class tax increase. And that's they're putting on the table a vision of financing the government. I hope progressives can put on the table a vision of financing the government that's a lot better than that. And it should involve corporations, high income individuals paying a lot more. But I think it's also going to hopefully involve over time a broader reform to our tax system.
To me, part of the virtue of simplification is closing loopholes that can raise more revenue, loopholes that have been larded up by lobbyists, because I do think, you know, the middle class's purchasing power, its ability to rise, has been so burdened. I think we need to reorient our approach to growing, rebuilding the middle, right? And, you know, encouraging investment, economic investment. What are some specific loopholes that you think should be top tier that we should close? Just commonsensically hard to oppose.
The loopholes for the very, very top. Loophole that allows people to entirely erase from the tax system their big gain on investments. That step up in basis at death, as it's called in the, you know, tax lingo. And it's a loophole or policy of choice that we have in our system that dramatically benefits, the very, very top, you know, in terms of, you know, people who own large assets outside of a retirement fund. It's a pretty limited population, and it's highly, highly concentrated at the top. And, you know, considerable planning goes into making sure that your assets don't ever face taxes in terms of the huge gains you get on them. So that's like at the very top, dealing with that in one way or other. And there are a variety of ways you can try to deal with it, is critical to effectively taxing the very, very top of the wealth spectrum in the United States. So that's sort of number one. And there, if we don't effectively deal with that, it becomes much, much harder to tax them on those gains. Just because even if you raise the tax rate, people have ways of avoiding it. So that's sort of at the very, very top, probably the most important. There are others too, like the, you know, new expansion in what they call small businesses in terms of investment by venture capitalists, but is really investment in Silicon Valley startups, which do very well. And, you know, to be clear, people should be able to get rewards from doing well and investing in startups. but there's no reason to give them a zero rate. They have plenty of incentive to invest in startups. So choices like that should be addressed. What we call loopholes and things that make the tax system unfair. Some of that's at the very top. Some of that is multinational corporations, like their ability to shift profits overseas. But some of it goes beyond the very top and corporations. And, you know, that includes, for instance, the special deduction, the 20% deduction that reduces your tax rate by 20% if you're a business owner, an independent contractor. And, you know, there are I recognize there are political barriers now that the Republicans put that in place in 2017 to getting rid of it. Because, you know, when you say you're getting rid of it, you get attacked by saying, oh, you're going to hurt small businesses. But it just doesn't make any sense to treat employees differently than an independent contractor in terms of their taxes in that way. And that's an example. And this bill puts in more, some of which is about the very top, but some of which isn't. Like the new exclusion for overtime, the new exclusion for tips, the new deduction for a debt on when you take out a loan on a vehicle. You know, I hope that those don't get continued. They made those particular ones temporary, but that is an example of further larding up the tax system for in ways that just don't make sense, rewarding some but not others.
So, you know, interestingly, on the inheritance tax, with the Republicans reframe as the death tax, you know, certainly there are thresholds to make sure that, you know, people have to sell family farms, businesses, historic homes. But I'm writing a book on Teddy Roosevelt right now. And in 1910, he was actually advocating as an alternative to a federal income tax, a stepped up inheritance tax, which I think is, you know, we forget around the time that this happened 110 odd years ago. You know, there was a lot of dynamic conversation about the best way to be fair and to grow a society where an opportunity economy. Would you just walk us through the mechanics of how a hugely profitable corporation can pay no taxes? Because I think that's one that's terribly just commonsensically confusing to people, and then how to fix it.
So, I think the main tax maneuver that large corporations can use and that no one else can is offshoring profits. You as an individual can't do it. We tax individuals on a global basis. And so it doesn't matter where you report your income, the U.S. should be able to tax it. Small businesses can't. Why? Because small businesses don't have branches in low tax countries overseas. But if you're a big multinational, you offshore your profits. How do you do it? There are a variety of ways, but the main way is you basically have transactions within your corporation where you make it look like the thing that is making all the money is in that foreign country and not in a higher tax country like the United States and others. And
it's just moving money around with accountants.
Right. That's the big way you do it. There's a whole sort of industry around it, often called transfer pricing within the company, in order to try to maximize the profit in the low tax country. And it's the way that over time, you know, these companies, you know, take a pharmaceutical giant, they do this tremendously. A huge amount of their profits get reported in low tax countries like Ireland, for instance. When you look at like their actual full business, and it's just like it is wildly disproportionate to the actual activities occurring in the low tax country. And so, you know, that's the basic problem when it comes to big multinationals, the sort of the largest of the you know, loopholes and planning maneuvers they do. But there are ways to address it. You know, and we are a kind of, you know, a powerful country that leads the world. That was part of the reason why we helped negotiate the global minimum tax deal, which would help address it. And the United States has an ability to tax its corporation on their foreign profits at a higher rate, partly backed, but now by the global minimum tax. So, that's, you know, there are solutions to this challenge. They will, you know, we thought that they would, that they are best done globally through a global agreement that helps prevent some of this, because otherwise you are still fighting corporations when they could like still go to a really low tax country and just not pay face tax there. And so your rules have to try to stop them from doing that. It becomes easier when the low tax country simply isn't low tax, because, you know, there's a minimum tax in now in that low tax country. So there's ways that we've now put in place that we can build on to try to stop it. And to be clear, this is an advantage that big multinationals have over everyone else, because they can engage in this maneuver that no one else can.
Right. And this is about sort of guardrails. It's about rules of the road, right? I mean, which don't exist and can be exploited in ways that, you know, the Main Street small business gets screwed because they can't afford a phalanx of lawyers and accountants. I want to close on this. You will be no doubt, you've worked in the last two Democratic administrations. You will be no doubt advising people who are thinking about running for president. Just what is your vision for a simple, tax message, economic message for Democrats that would grow the middle, simplify, you know, have fairness, but encourage economic growth, not retard it, which is always the hit on a lot of Democratic plans. What's your vision for what a pro-growth Democratic tax message would look like?
So number one, we should be lowering costs for families. And right now, given what the Trump administration has done, there is a way to do that, which is to eliminate the tariffs that they have unilaterally put into place and are going to raise taxes on families by $2.5 trillion over the next decade. They do raise revenue. They are the wrong way to raise revenue. That is a burden on families. And we have better ways to do it. So I think part of the message and vision should be, how do we have a tax system that is fair, that is simple, encourages growth? And we have a contrast, a system that, you know, we just saw larded up. We cut taxes disproportionately for the very top, and where they are replacing some of the revenue and some of the deficit increase, not all of it, but some, but they're doing it in fundamentally unfair ways, and ways that will, in fact, be counterproductive for our economy, such as in the form of tariffs. So lower cost agenda by getting rid of the tariffs. I think an agenda that says, yes, we do have ways of making sure that the very top and large corporations pay what they need to and should, while maintaining incentives to invest. And there are ways to do that. Global minimum tax, reforming our international system, raising the corporate tax rate, addressing longstanding issues like the fact that the very rich can entirely eliminate their capital gains. I also hope that we can have a serious discussion about simplification of the tax system and eliminating some of the provisions which just don't make sense and reward some at the expense of others. And that's things like, you know, independent contractors, but not employees, and so on. I would hope that that could be a part of the discussion. Finally, I do think that there are ways, and we didn't touch on this, but there are ways to make the experience of our tax system better along several dimensions. Mm-hmm. We should have a system where tax filing is easy for the vast bulk of families and low cost. That was part of the direct file system. That was a public filing system. No need to pay TurboTax. That was being piloted and got rave reviews from those who used it. The plan was to expand it. It is now being eliminated. That should be put back in place. There are for the vast bulk of families that can work. We should have an IRS, that is fairly enforcing the law and is able to do so effectively, even when it comes to the top of the income spectrum, the most sophisticated taxpayers and large corporations. That is going the wrong direction. So I also think that a final aspect of this reform, of any good reform, should be a system where Americans, when they experience it, when they file, when if they ever, you know, face enforcement, they come away thinking this system actually works well and is fair. And that is not the direction we're right now going.
Works well and is fair. What a crazy, crazy concept. I mean, you look at all the ways common sense has been undercut and undone in this bill, the way it will exacerbate, dramatically increase, income inequality, which undercuts the idea of the opportunity society while deeply increasing, massively increasing our deficit and debt. This is a lose-lose that flies in the face of common sense. And David Kamen, NYU professor, Obama and Biden alumni, thank you for your work. We thank you for your insights, and thanks for joining us on How to Fix It.
Great to be here. Enjoy the conversation.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.